ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Andy Finn Show. I'm Andy Finn, the Finn Man. And for the next hour, you're in Finland. Today is Monday, October 16th. And, boy, there's a lot to talk about this week. Last week I was on holiday. Actually, it was Columbus Day, so I didn't have a show. And 2 weeks ago, although there was plenty to talk about, I spent the entire hour on the Bob Woodward book and what it meant for what we know about politics in Washington and the war in Iraq. I talked briefly about the Virginia governor's race, the Allen Webb race, because the N-word had just been introduced 2 weeks ago, and I predicted at the time that Allen would lose. And the Foley scandal had just hit the papers, and I didn't even touch it. I didn't have time to touch it. So we'll correct some of those mistakes, but the big topic these days is North Korea. So I'm going to cover North Korea in a little while, but I'm not going to start right in on the heavy-duty stuff here. Let's tackle something just a little bit lighter. Let's see, what do we got? Well, we got the detainee torture bill. We've got all the politics. We've got too much of this is serious. Well, I guess the best thing we can start with then is CITGO. So, some of you may have received emails or you may have heard about this campaign to stop us from buying CITGO gasoline. Now, CITGO is a wholly owned subsidiary of Venezuela's state-owned oil company. And so the principle is that money that you pay to CITGO goes primarily to Venezuela. That is, it doesn't go to Saudi Arabia or the Middle East. And a lot of people are unhappy with Hugo Chavez because he attacks President Bush and he calls him the devil and he laughs at us at the UN, and we're not happy about that. So there have been people proposing a boycott of CITGO and a boycott of Venezuelan oil. Now, let's clear up, first of all, the urban legend part of this. So this is a little bit different than the email that came around over the last few years about not buying Middle Eastern oil. And it listed six gas station brands that it said were bought their oil in the Middle East. And then it listed three or four that said they didn't use Middle Eastern oil. And so if we could use them, if we bought gas from them, we could shut off our demand for Middle East oil. Well, A, that's what's known as an urban legend. First of all, it's not true that those particular oil companies bought a lot of oil overseas and then the others didn't buy any overseas or in the Middle East. So the facts are wrong. Secondly, the oil market is such, oil is a fungible resource, and the oil market is such that you can't, at the consumer level, force producers into producing more or not getting their money or whatever. It's just not that kind of a market. If we don't want to buy Venezuelan oil, China would love to sign up for more Venezuela oil. They've already struck a deal with Venezuela and with a couple countries in the Middle East for a certain amount of oil, and they would love to up those quantities. So us refusing oil from overseas when we import almost two-thirds, well, no, I guess it's a little over half of our oil now, is probably not a smart plan. It just isn't something that can possibly work. Our worst fear would be if we could effectively keep Venezuela from selling any oil in the U.S. Well, they might in the end be happy to do that, actually. It's cheaper for them because it's shorter to bring it to the U.S. than to China. But they'd figure out a way if we can't work something out with them. So that's the old ad about these not buying oil from the Middle East. Now, this newer email ad that comes around, or email chain letter, urban legend, is not to buy CITGO gas. Actually, there's also one that says we should buy CITGO gas because it's a leftist cause that's pushing it and saying that, you know, we should support Hugo Chavez. He's a visionary or something like that. But the one about not buying CITGO gas, here's the problem. It's actually twofold. One is we can't hurt Venezuela. That's pretty clear from the last example I gave you, that in fact, whatever we do, they'll find a place to sell their oil to. That's just the way world oil markets work. And the second thing is that these companies, I shouldn't say that, I should say the employees who work for Citgo are largely here in the U.S. And so it turns out that there are thousands of Citgo gas stations here in the U.S. and thousands of Americans are employed at these gas stations and people are making their livings off of it. And it would be a mistake to try and shut them down because you'll only be hurting people in this country who are currently making their livings around Citgo gas stations. So it doesn't make a lot of sense to me. But in any case, I bring this up because Citgo took out a full-page ad in this morning's Washington Post, Monday, October 16th, 2006. And in it, they are trying to correct, quote, misleading and inaccurate information about Citgo. And they've pointed out there's been a call for a boycott of their product, et cetera. And it goes on to explain everything that they're doing for the cause of oil in this country and in the world. And they have their hearts in the right place is what they're saying. The other thing that is interesting is that Hugo Chavez has one-upped the U.S. by putting a free heating oil program in place to needy Americans. So here's Venezuela subsidizing some of our poor to the tune of, I don't know how many millions of dollars of oil, 70 million a year or a shipment or something he sends over. So a substantial amount of heating oil that he's given away to Americans who need it. Anyway, that's the story with Citgo. I don't recommend a boycott. I don't think we can do too much with a boycott except hurt people that work at Citgo stations here in the U.S. So I don't recommend it. Let me move on to another topic that's a little bit heavier, but it's time to get talking a little bit about politics and the election. So it is true that it's been a relatively quiet week. It's really been amazingly quiet, actually. Because what we've seen is no bombshells in the last week. Oh, there have been a couple of news items that pushed the Foley case along a little further or Hastert's problems along a little further. But no bombshells. And we were seeing bombshells about every 3 to 5 days over a period of a month there, it seemed to me. So this little respite is worth it. In any case, let me just run through some of the highlights. So in the Virginia Senate race, which I'm interested in right here, it's a statistical dead heat. Allen at 49, Webb at 47. Don't know that Webb can overtake Allen, but gee, that would be fun to see. I don't know that we'll actually get there or not before Election Day, but wouldn't mind it, that's for sure. I've never been much of a fan of George Allen, I have to say. But while a lot of Republicans are feeling pessimistic about all this stuff, it turns out that the White House is pretty upbeat about the prospects of the Republicans. Karl Rove and George Bush are both saying that this is going to work out just fine. This is going to be a good year for them. Don't know if they have an October surprise planned or exactly what's going on, but for whatever reason, they are confident. There's that word again. The president's confident. What a surprise. It's really kind of surprising because if you look at any number of things here, do you approve or this is coming out of the Virginia poll, by the way. I believe, yeah, this is the Virginia poll the Washington Post did. Do you approve or disapprove of the way George W. Bush is handling his job? 56% disapprove. And so the Republicans have still got a hole to dig themselves out of. Bush is still in a hole. And that really hasn't changed too much, as we suspected after the uptick that took place around 9/11, when the president did a series of speeches in advance of 9/11 about terrorism in Iraq and trying to tie the two together. He bumped up a few points, and he settled down now a couple of points, and it's not clear how it's going to affect some of the races, but there's a lot more Republican races that are in play now than Republicans thought would be. And they're starting to redeploy their money, it's said. So I don't know too much about that. But we'll see if that holds true in the coming weeks. The other piece is that it seems to me that Denny Hastert's in trouble. Hastert is in trouble primarily because of the Foley scandal. Turns out he knew something about Foley at least a few months ago. And he's claiming he didn't, but there are people that said he did. So it's going to take till after the election for them to get to the bottom of it. But, I mean, there's no question that Hastert's done as far as leadership goes. If the Republicans lose the House, he would be stepping down as the defeated leader of the Republican House. And if they don't lose the House, they're still going to replace him. He's a liability at this point. They just don't want to jump ship in midstream, that is 3 weeks before an election. But it turns out Hastert has other problems. You know, I'm not probably not going to spend a lot of time on Foley. I'll say a couple things about him and that sex scandal tonight, because I haven't addressed it before. But Hastert's really got an interesting situation, because he's got other charges against him. I mean, this is a guy that's pretty political. He's low-key. Everybody seems to like him. He's no Tom DeLay. He's not a firebrand, you know, at the podium. But he plays hardball, and that's why he's where he is. You know, he was the one that allowed the rewriting of all the ethics committee rules a year ago in January, when it looked like it could cost Tom DeLay his position and leadership if he were indicted. So they gutted the rules about that. And then the Republicans on the committee that were too tough on DeLay the previous year and admonished him, I guess they did, or they censure him. No, they didn't censure him. They admonished him, warned him, something. Those guys were replaced, and more pliant Republicans were put in charge of the Ethics Committee. So Hastert's got his fingerprints all over some of these things, including this multi-million dollar profit he made after he bought some property, approved an interstate extension road kind of a thing going through and near the property, and then sold the property at a big profit and doesn't see anything wrong with it. And, of course, there's other people that have done that. It's just this guy's the Speaker of the House. He's third in line to be president. That means, so let's review the bidding. So Dick Cheney's actually the president. George W. Bush is a heartbeat away from the presidency, because if Cheney's ticker ever goes, Bush is on his own. And then Denny Hastert is next, third to be president. Anyway, Hastert probably won't lose his election, but the Republicans are in rough shape this year. You know, the talk after the bit of a rebound after September 11th among Republicans was that, well, you know, the Democrats were counting their chickens too early, and the late-breaking undecideds always moved towards Republicans because of security issues in recent years. They got a million reasons why it's not going to be as bad as they thought it might be, and they're glad the election isn't held today. The more time that passes, the better their chances are. I'm not sure that's true. I have a feeling that the more time that passes, the worse it is for Republicans. Let's take the major issues. Iraq. Iraq is not going to get better because we wait another week or 2 weeks. It simply isn't. Iraq is going to get worse or stay the same. That's going to eat at people. It's going to bother them. The number one issue of the election, everybody agrees, is Iraq, and it's not going to be good news for Republicans. It's going to be worse news by November, not better news. Secondly, there's little hotspots blowing up around the world. North Korea, problems with Iran, stuff in the Middle East. Now, it's hard to know which way the voters will turn on those, but there's unrest, and it doesn't look like it's a situation Bush has effectively under control, or the Republicans have effectively under control. So that's an issue, and that's a problem. A third major issue is the economy. Now, the economy is in pretty good shape, but unfortunately, from Bush's point of view, he doesn't get the credit. Republicans don't get the credit from a lot of people for this. I think there's at least two reasons for this. One reason is they don't get the credit because a lot of people aren't feeling that flush. You know, if your portfolio is doing well, you're okay. But if you're an hourly worker waiting for your next raise, you may not feel like you're doing that great just because the stock market is up. And then the other piece of this is that in addition to the fact that there's plenty of people not feeling the recovery, this recovery has been borrowed from our children. You know, the Bush administration and the spokespeople and the Republicans are constantly reminding us that we have to make these tax cuts permanent because the tax cuts are what are making the economy so good. I'm sorry, but this was a huge mistake to make these tax cuts, $1.9 billion over a period of 10 years, because you could see the trap we were going to fall into. People are going to say immediately, oh, well, you can't raise taxes. Why can't you raise taxes? You know, basically, Bush, if you look at our deficit this year and every year and previous years that are all attributable to Bush, by the time we're done, it will equal or exceed the total of his tax cuts, $1.9 billion, trillion dollars. And, you know, usually when you want to bring about a recovery, a stimulus package, you know, $80 billion, $100 billion, $200 billion maybe, targeted stimulus to get the economy moving. You don't throw money at the problem, which is what Bush has done. Of course, he wasn't trying to keep the economy going. The economy was flush at the time he initially decided to give away the money. He just wanted to lower taxes, and he doesn't care what it does to the economy, and he doesn't care what it does to the deficit. He just assumes it's the right policy because he has a black and white view of the world, and he had to put a stake in the ground, and that's his stake in the ground on economics. Well, I'm going to stop there on that piece of it. But when we come back from this break, we're going to talk about a couple of things, including North Korea and the whole mess that we're dealing with around the world.
You want to be blunt about what has taken place. Sometimes when you don't measure, you just shuffle kids through. Then you wake up at the high school level and find out that the literacy level of our children are appalling.
Get your hands off that mouse. The Andy Finn Show will be right back.
Yeah!